All right, good morning, everyone. I'm Ellen Roundy, like you said. I'm a graduate student with the Rose Breeding and Genetics Program at Texas A&M. And I'm going to be talking to you today about some work we did trying to find genetic resistance to rose rosette disease in garden roses. This is actually part of a larger project we're working on, which is breeding for resistance to rose rosette disease. So the project was directed by my advisor, David Byrne, also of Texas A&M. And we got a lot of help from Natalie Anderson, our research associate. And we worked with a lot of people at different universities across the country as well, Oklahoma State, the University of Tennessee. And we worked with A&M Extension and some private rosarians and breeders in California and northern Texas. So some background on the disease, rose rosette disease. It's relatively new. It was first observed in 1941. More or less simultaneously in California, Wyoming, and Manitoba, Canada. Ignore the green on the map for now and just look at the dates. From its earlier observations in the western part of the country, it's moved steadily eastwards and is now extremely common in the central and eastern United States. It actually hasn't reached us at A&M yet, at least the College Station campus. There appears to be a southern border to the disease, and we actually haven't found it much further south than Dallas. And actually, if you draw a line across the country level with Dallas, it holds true across the country. So we're hoping it stays that way. It wasn't until 2011 that the causal agent of the disease was identified, and it's actually a virus called rose rosette virus. It's in the genus Amarovirus, and it is exclusive to roses. Attempts to inoculate other members of Rosaceae with the virus have been unsuccessful. The virus is transmitted by an areophyid mite, and this is actually a fairly common method of transmission for members of Amarovirus. The virus reservoir is in Rosa multiflora. Rosa multiflora is a non-native and highly invasive rose species. It was heavily planted in the mid-20th century as a method of erosion control, and it just kind of got carried away from there. Turns out the areophyid mite really likes Rosa multiflora, even though it's not the natural host. Rosa multiflora is extremely susceptible to the disease. So actually, if we go back to that map, everywhere there's green, that's where there have been observations of Rosa multiflora. So I said that rose rosette disease is very common in the central and eastern United States, and that's also where we see a lot of Rosa multiflora. So where multiflora goes, rose rosette disease usually follows. Rose rosette disease can have a lot of different symptoms, and they'll vary with the cultivar and the species and with the stage of the disease. Symptoms can appear fairly rapidly, but they may also take over a year to appear after initial inoculation. So just because a plant looks healthy doesn't mean that it's not harboring the virus, and that if a mite lands on it and goes to another plant, that it can't spread the virus as well. So even though the symptoms can be so variable, the most common, or at least the most prominent symptom of rose rosette disease is what's known as the witch's broom. This plant here is actually exhibiting several witch's broom. Yes. So each of these red growths is a single witch's broom. You might see just one witch's broom on a plant. You might see several. I've seen cases where the entire plant is basically witch's brooms. And they're just these usually red growths, sort of broom-shaped. Usually the petioles on the leaves are very reduced. It might be very thorny. The growth is usually very whip-like and soft. However, we can also have some more minor symptoms, notably red color that sticks around longer than red color should. Oftentimes in roses, the new growth is red, but if that color sticks around for weeks or months, you might have cause to be concerned. This red color may or may not be associated with a witch's broom or with any other symptoms. Oftentimes we see succulent stems associated with rose rosette disease, and you actually can see that a bit here. This stem here is a bit thicker and more fleshy than we would normally see on a rose, and so that would also be a symptom of the disease. Thorn proliferation can also be a symptom of rose rosette disease. If you have a very thorny rose plant in the first place, that doesn't necessarily mean you have the disease. You really have to look at a new growth as compared to the rest of the plant. If a new growth is thornier than the rest of the plant, that's when you start being concerned. Some cultivars are actually as thorny as this stem here, but that stem is much thornier than the rest of the plant, and so we would call that a symptom of the disease as well. And rose rosette disease can also affect the flowers of the plant, leading to blossom blight like we see here. So this might be where people start, where a casual gardener might start noticing it more. They might not think much of a weird red growth on a plant. They're just not used to looking for that. But when you start impacting the flowers of the plant, people might start noticing more. We plant roses for their flowers, and when we stop getting flowers, that's really a cause for concern. These roses are also much more susceptible to dieback and winter kill. So you end up with plants that look like this eventually, where they're half dead, and you really can't see much of the plant there because it's so brown it's blending in with the mulch. So even though we can have all these variable symptoms, we have all these plants that get rose rosette disease have one thing in common. In 2 to 4 years, sometimes 3 or 4 years, they die. Basically what's happening is all the excessive growth is depriving the plant of starch, and the plant just starves to death. Depending on the cultivar, 2 years, or maybe it'll hang on for 4 years. We do have some known sources of resistance, or some hopeful sources of resistance, in wild rose species. However, we're not 100% certain about all of this. We don't know what accessions were used to determine resistant roses. We did not do these studies ourselves, and we especially don't have the accessions that were used. And since we're dealing with highly variable species, we can't say, for example, that every member of Rosa sativa is going to be resistant. That being said, the species listed here are probably going to be our best bet of resistance. So Rosa sativa, Rosa palustris, Rosa carolina, and Rosa californica are all North American native species, and they all have been reported at one time or another to be resistant. However, they are not extensively used in breeding, and by not extensively, I mean hardly at all. So we actually think that there might be fertility issues between these rose species and most garden roses. Since our overall goal is breeding for resistance, that's not very promising for us. We'd really like to be able to cross these with garden roses. But if we can't do that, we're going to have to find cultivars that are resistant. Rosa spinosissima, the other species listed there, is actually a European native species. It has been used more extensively in breeding, but still not a lot. But if we can find that, if we can determine and find accessions that are definitely resistant, that would probably have a little bit more promise in a breeding program. Interestingly, Rosa bracteata is susceptible to the virus, but you don't usually see it with the disease. As far as we can tell, it's actually resistant to the areophyid mite that transmits the disease. We're not sure why yet, but we're working on that. And as far as we can tell, many, most, or even all rose cultivars are susceptible to rose rosette disease. So our overall goal with this project was to confirm cultivar susceptibility, especially of certain very popular commercial varieties that we were very interested in, and to find potentially resistant roses to confirm their resistance and use them in our breeding program. So most of our observations were made summer to fall 2014. Some of them are actually still ongoing. More observations are coming in. And they were made in areas with very high rose rosette disease pressure. So not in College Station, but they were made in northern Texas with some with AgriLife Extension and with a private rosarian, as well as in Tulsa, Oklahoma and Knoxville, Tennessee. All these areas have really bad outbreaks of rose rosette disease and a lot of plantings of roses, so they were very well suited to this sort of observations. Normally the observations were just made visually, just looking at the plant. It has a witch's broom, it's susceptible, but we did inoculate some plants with the virus or tested some of them for the presence of the virus in the tissue. The plants were classified as susceptible, meaning they definitely showed symptoms, suspect, meaning we were going to watch them for another year before deciding, or asymptomatic, it looks healthy so far. And all in all, we had 564 observations from 400 cultivars and species. What we found was that around 50 cultivars are asymptomatic so far. That number has actually gone up a little bit as new observations have come in, but also as new observations come in, we find that we're also eliminating other plants as well, so it's not quite as exciting as it sounds. We do find that a variety of rose classes are represented. So this is interesting because oftentimes in roses, there's a stereotype that shrub roses, for example, are really healthy and strong and have good disease resistance, and that something like hybrid teas are really wimpy and they're going to get every disease under the sun. But that's actually not what we're seeing here. If you look, these are some of the major rose classes we looked at, Floribunda, Grandiflora, Hybrid Tea, Shrub, and all of them actually have susceptible members, and most of them actually have asymptomatic representatives as well. So we're not actually seeing that, oh, if you plant a shrub rose, you have a better chance of not getting rosette disease. So that's something important that we need to get out there, that you're not necessarily going to be able to avoid rosette disease by planting a shrub instead of some other plant. We did find that around 8 more species were actually asymptomatic, so this is promising for our breeding program as well. These are the North American species, Rosa virginiana, Rosa arkansana, Rosa blanda, and Rosa minutifolia. Again, these are North American species, which means usually that they haven't been used extensively or at all in breeding programs. So again, we might find that there are fertility issues with these. We did find that there were also asymptomatic European and Asian species, Rosa lavigata, Rosa moschata, and Rosa rugosa. Rosa moschata and Rosa rugosa especially have been used in breeding programs quite extensively, and so there's a lot more promise there if they should prove to be resistant. I skipped over Rosa acicularis there in the middle because it's actually North American, European, and Asian. I don't know that it's been used much in breeding, but it's something to look into anyhow. So this gets a little bit more interesting when we look at comparisons between species and species hybrids. So a hybrid multiflora, for example, that would be anything that's crossed with Rosa multiflora. Rosa multiflora being the virus reservoir, it's not surprising that everything we looked at that was a hybrid multiflora was susceptible. We should not have been surprised about that. It gets more interesting when we look at something like hybrid musk. A hybrid musk rose is going to be anything that's crossed with Rosa moschata, and Rosa moschata was one of the ones that we found was asymptomatic. However, we didn't look at very many hybrid musks, but the ones that we did were all susceptible. So if we're able to confirm resistance in Rosa moschata, that'll be something very interesting to look into and see how resistance is actually passed along. We did find that there was contradicting data for Rosa wichuriana and some other cultivars. What I mean by this is that we'd have multiple plantings of an individual cultivar or species, and one would be asymptomatic, one would be symptomatic. Sometimes we'd find that one was asymptomatic, symptomatic, and suspect all at once. And not sometimes this would be at different locations. Tennessee might report that it's susceptible. Texas might say that it's asymptomatic. But sometimes this was actually in the same location. So we have a couple different possibilities for that. One might be that there's low disease pressure for a particular plant at a particular time. We might be dealing with different accessions of rose species in particular. There's a lot of variety within the species, and we don't have that information yet. And we're really dealing with existing plantings, and we weren't starting from scratch. It's also possible that there's variation within the virus. We do know that there's some variation. We don't know if there's enough to cause major changes as far as resistance goes, but it's something to look into in the future. So ultimately, we were able to confirm that certain commercial varieties were susceptible, and we identified asymptomatic roses for further resistance evaluation. And we'll be doing those through field trials in Tennessee and Delaware and via controlled inoculations. And this is actually really important information for our overall project, which is breeding for resistance. We've actually gone ahead and started using some of the asymptomatic roses in our crosses already, just sort of crossing our fingers and hoping that they prove to be resistant. If not, well, we'll get more observations and refine our crosses for next year. So hopefully, as more observations come in, we'll be able to refine our breeding program further and develop roses resistant to rosette disease. Lots of people to thank for observations and for funding. Does anyone have any questions?
I've got one.
Okay.
Is rose rosette, does it affect roses in other countries as well, or is it mainly in the U.S.?
The question was, does rose rosette disease affect roses in other countries? As far as I know, it doesn't. I haven't heard reports of it anywhere but the U.S. As far as we know, it's native to the U.S. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yes.
I just wonder about the effect of the lift of those, you know, the disease. Have you got any, data about that, because you know, based on your slides, I'm just wondering about the phenotypic screening only. How much is that reliable without any genetically controlled?
Yeah. So the question was, if I'm paraphrasing this correctly, have we looked into the heritability of resistance, especially the genetics versus the phenotypic. That's something we're going to be looking into. The point of this was really more to eliminate roses and not look at, and so that we wouldn't have to look at them further. So with the roses that we have decided we're going to test further for resistance, we are going to be looking into the genetics of it, but we haven't done that yet. So, yes, we are. Other groups in the overall project are looking into viral detection. They are developing several different tests, both antibody-based and nucleic acid-based, for viral detection in the tissue. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.